everyone, Rachel Corman here. Happy to be back on Inside the Artist. I know it's been a little bit since I've posted an episode. I've been taking a little bit of a hiatus. I just wrapped on the TV show I've been working on, and I went on a trip. I was in New York, London, Paris, then went back home to Minneapolis to visit my family. I know it's been a bit, but I'm back, and I'm very excited. I have some awesome guests coming on, and I'm also going to try to get these episodes out quicker to you. I'm trying to get out one a week now. There's also going to be some very exciting special episodes coming up where we might be going to a venue and talk to some bands that are playing there. I don't want to reveal what it is yet. It's still in the works. But just know that Inside the Artist is expanding, and I'm collaborating with some more people, coming up with new ideas to make this a little bit bigger and get some more people involved. So yeah, really excited about that. Anyways, I'm back. Thanks for listening, and hope I didn't leave you hanging too long. Enjoy my interview with Eric Himmel. Gonna ask you really personal questions.
That kind of stuff is fun sometimes, though. Yeah. You know, so do whatever we want.
So Eric is a producer, guitarist. He created the Sunset Jam in LA, which is the biggest music night in Los Angeles. He basically is the mayor of Los Angeles music. is that safe to say?
That's funny. You could say something like that. I don't know. I mean, that's funny.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Just like your guest, Nick Marzock.
Like Nick Marzock, yep. I was going to say that. Is that how you guys know each other?
Actually, no, we did not know each other there. We were introduced here by another guy from Pittsburgh, Walter Eno.
Who's Walter
plays
Eno?
Plays guitar for Survivor.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a multi-instrumentalist, just an all-around amazing guy and musician.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And that brought you guys together.
Yeah, and I've done a bunch of different things with Nick. So, yeah, I'm here via Pittsburgh.
Love it. Yeah. Keep bringing more of the Pittsburgh guys over here. So, how long have you been in LA?
I've been here, I feel like, almost 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
A long time.
Yeah. It is a long time when I think about it, yeah.
Can you believe that it's been that long, or does time just kind of fly by?
I can't. It's just all kind of is one big blur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big blur. Do you remember anything? Like any fun stories from your time when you first moved here?
I actually was working a regular job back then. So yeah, I've got some interesting stories, but it just seems like this is the only life I remember is my life in Los Angeles. Everything else before it is kind of a whole separate existence.
I kind of have the same feeling. Did you move here soon, early 20s?
Yeah.
Yeah, same.
Early 20s. And where are you from?
I'm from Minneapolis.
Ah. That's fun.
So, very different.
The Twin Cities.
The Twin Cities. Yeah. I just got back from there. I was also there on my adventures.
Oh, wow.
I've been a lot of places.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a long time.
Have you played there?
I have never played in Minneapolis.
No? You know First Ave, though, right? First Ave?
I've never left the airport. I went through the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport when I was a kid, and I was just amazed on how
it's huge,
massive.
Right?
Yeah.
People insane. Don't realize that. I actually have a funny story. When I was in high school, I did a high school trip to D.C., and we met some people on the East Coast. No offense to you East Coasters, but they were so not aware of people from the Midwest, and they were like, do you live on a farm? And we actually had to take a bus 2 hours to get to an airport. It's we have one of the biggest airports in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost in a great location. That was when Northwest was still
Yes,
around.
Before it Delta.
It was a hub for
wow.
Northwest.
Yeah. I'm very impressed with your knowledge of airlines.
I wanted to be a pilot before I wanted to be a musician, so.
No way.
Yeah.
What made you decide to switch to be a musician?
I think it was just girls found musicians attractive, so I was maybe I'll just play guitar and then that'll work for me.
Then you get all the girls.
Yeah.
How has that worked out for you?
I don't know. Sometimes.
So what was your first job when you were here? You said you worked a regular job.
Yeah, actually, I was working at Rite Aid, believe it or not. I was a store manager for Rite Aid when I was in my early 20s. Actually, when I was 19, I think they promoted me back home. And I came up with this big, elaborate plan that they were going to promote me. And that was my way of convincing my parents that I was going to move to Los Angeles. I was like, yeah, they're going to promote me. I'm going to be a district manager, blah, 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 blah. Next thing you know, I quit my job after 8 months. Saved up a bunch of money, quit the job.
Good for you. And yeah. Then what did you do from there?
I actually took a tour working with this electronica artist And I still work for her today. Her name is Jess. She's like a, she does the vocalist stuff over the DJ tracks, and she's kind of like an innovator in that world. She's been doing it so long, and we actually just put out two of three acoustic videos. So there's one more coming. So she did like a stripped down acoustic thing with her songs. And, you know, that was the really the first tour that I did was right then. So I just kind of put it all on the line and took this tour and, you know, slowly started working with more artists over time and
built your own company yourself, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was like probably 2010 that happened. And where are we now? 2017. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, that was it. That was the first thing. And it's funny, this producer I worked with on that specific gig was like, however long you think it's going to take, double it. And I was like, I don't even know what you mean by that. Like, it's some esoterical thing. And he's been so accurate every time. So anything that I've ever thought would happen in music, or I would make money, or I would gig or tour, it's always taken twice as long. It's so weird. I don't know.
Do you think that's just because he told you that and you had that in your mind?
No. It's like I remembered afterwards. I'm like, wow, that really took a while. Or it's just so weird how it comes about. I don't know. I hope not. Otherwise, it's going to take me twice as long to do everything the rest of my life.
No, oh, no, God. No. So how long did it take for you to create the Sunset Jam?
Well, it's a funny story about this is there's so many different jams around town, and people kind of don't really, they're not aware of the history of these jam nights, and they all kind of spawn. Like, there's one at the Whiskey, there's one at Lucky Strike, and there's, I don't know really, you know, that's another conversation for them, but they all stemmed from this night called Lucy's 51, which was in Toluca Lake in 2013. And it was Brent Woods, Kenny Arnoff, James Lomenzo. They did like an all-star jam, completely impromptu. You know, it was a really, really fun hang, and it would be packed. There'd be hundreds of people in there, and they just kind of just jam off the cuff, like real jamming, you know, just no idea where the song's going to go, you know, vibing off the other members of the band. And it was a really fun night, and I guess maybe they closed that place or somebody went on tour or whatever and they stopped it. But it was like a really hot spot amongst like musicians for about 6 months. And
did you used to go there?
Yeah, I used to go there. I used to play. Brent's a good friend of mine. Brent Woods, the guitar player. He plays with John Waite now and Sebastian Bach. And after that, I actually started my own jam. It was upstairs of the Red Rock Club. And it was like December 2013, I want to say.
Okay.
And it flopped. It was like a huge, like, nobody was showing up. Nobody, it was like, I don't know what happened. It was just bad timing. But at the same time, somebody called me about going and playing for this Russian band called Mumy Troll. And one day I was just there. We were doing the jam upstairs, and there was like 30 people there. And then like 50 Russians walk in. I'm like, what is going on? They were there to kind of see what I was doing and to listen to me play. And it was perfect timing because that jam never took off. And then at the same time, these guys asked me to go on tour with them. And I toured with them for like 3 years.
Wow.
So it was pretty
exciting. Where'd you tour? All over the world?
Yeah, we went all over the world. This band, Mumy Troll, is the most famous Russian indie rock band. So they've been around 25 years. And, you know, we'd go over there and just play big stadiums, big shows. And like my first gig with them was at the Olympics.
No shit.
Yeah, in Sochi, yeah.
Wow.
And I think we did like a 1 hour rehearsal.
That's it.
Like, yeah, and all the songs were in Russian. It was like really, really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did they hear about the jam? Like, how did they know to come find you?
A guy named Jeff Greenberg, who owns the Village Studios, has been working with this band for I don't even know how long, a long time. And a guy I was working with, Pete Mills, was working at the Village. And I guess Jeff told Pete, hey, this band's looking for a guitar player. Pete told me, and next thing you know,
they showed up to come check you out. They
showed up at State Souls Red Rock, and was like, wow, okay.
Nice.
We'll do this.
Hey, that's how it works. That's why connections are so important.
Yeah, it's really blows my mind sometimes.
We were just talking, too, about the connections in L.A. in the music industry, how there's so many different types of, I guess, musical groups here, and it's so interesting how everyone intertwines. And actually, I think a lot of that happens at the Viper Room, at your Sunset Jams, where I see them like, wait, how do you know so-and-so? And it just is amazing how everyone just kind of comes together at those things.
It's a really small community. like everybody seems to know each other. Everybody kind of knows what gigs you've done or what, you know, what they've done. It's really interesting. And I've come across musicians there, or I've met musicians on the street that know about the night, that have been at the night, but I'd never met them there at the night. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Do you find that some people know who you are and you haven't even met them just because they know your name from the jam?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people have been there. And, you know, then somebody introduces me and that, hey, this guy wants to play here. And I'm like, hey, have you been to the night before? And they're like, yeah, I've been here like 3 or 4 times. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Cool. There's a lot of people that come in and out. It's really, really exciting. I mean, we get anywhere between 250 to 400, 450 every Monday coming in. And we're doing it every week. So it's always new faces.
So how did the initial idea start? I know you said you started at the Rockwood Club?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
It built. Wasn't it at State Social? Is that where it started?
Yeah, they changed the name of that club. And the Russian thing, it was like a slow time. We had just done a tour in Germany and Switzerland. And I came back, and this was October of 2015. And, like, I've always done shows. Like, I've always done pop-up shows where I've had a lot of players, a lot of different guests. And, you know, I did a birthday show that year, 2015, and I had 20 guest musicians. I was like, you know what? All my musician friends weren't gigging at the time. So I was like, why don't I just create a gig and then we'll all just start gigging? Well, you know.
You're creating your own opportunities.
Yeah. And we did it. And I don't know what happened. We did it. The first one was January 11th, 2016. And it just blew up. It was like the next week there was like 80 people there. And I was like, oh my God, this is pretty wild.
Just word of mouth?
Yeah, the next week, 140 people, 150. It's like,
wow.
Very early on in the days of the State Social House, I knew that we were going to have to find another venue. You know,
because it kept building.
Yeah, and it's a very small place. It's not really built for music. And
yeah. Was it upstairs?
It was upstairs.
Where they do little concerts upstairs?
Yeah, I've always had a really good relationship with the Vipe Room for years and years and years. I feel like it's my home away from home. So to have the jam there, it feels so good for me because, like, that place just means so much to me, so.
And I have to ask you, why Monday nights? What is it about Monday? What about us people who, like, have a regular job and need to work every day?
Well,
that's why it's hard for me to get out.
I know. I know. Well, most musicians are gigging Fridays and Saturdays. So if we're doing, like, a jam night where, you know, the whole thing is to feature as many people as possible, not everybody's available on the weekends. So it's kind of like midweek kind of thing. Well, it's not really midweek. It's the first day of the week. But mm-hmm. There's another night on Tuesdays, and there's another night on Wednesdays. So we share a lot of the same players from time to time. So I knew that it had to be an off day.
Right.
And there's also a Thursday night, Sayers Club night, that's been going for like 8-10 years. Like, they've done an insane amount of shows. So Monday just seemed to have nothing that was conflicting. I think there was probably some jazz or R&B or hip-hop nights around town, but that's not really our scene, so it just made sense.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know why we picked Monday. Just, I don't know. Maybe that was the only night the club had available as well. I don't know.
So you have a good relationship with the Vipe Room, and so they were, like, covering it over here?
Yeah, we started the talks really early on, actually. Like, we moved there July 18th, so we're coming up on 1 year at the Vipe Room. We've been doing the jam for a year and a half. And I just planted the seeds really early because I just knew. I knew it was just going to keep growing and keep growing. And there's certain players in my phone that I knew if we went to the Vipe Room, I'd be able to get them to come down and start playing. And, you know, it was really, really cool.
Yeah, and I can imagine because I've been going now since the Vipe Room. I didn't go when it was at State Social. But you pack the room. I mean, I don't imagine how all those people can fit into a smaller venue than that.
I know. I have photos of it. It's just, like, insane.
And you get some pretty exciting guests, too.
Yeah.
Who do you want to share some people who
have
stopped by?
We've had probably over 1,200 musicians since we started the night that have played, which is really incredible. But we've had all the guys, you know, from Shania Twain's band, from Pink's band, Selena Gomez, Katy Perry. So all, like, the modern pop guys. And then we've also had people that have played for Foreigner, you know. And
I should mention, if I haven't, this is a free jam, everyone.
Free.
So if you're in L.A. or if you ever visit L.A. and you want to come to the Sunset Jam, it's Monday nights at the Vipe Room, and it's free. And you get to see all these professional musicians play. And yeah. it's a great time. And you have themes each week.
We have themes every week. And we also accept new players through the internet. So if you're going to be in L.A. and you want to play and you've got the musicianship, you should check out the website, thesunsetjam.net, and you can send in a video. But let's see. We've had Robbie Krieger from The Doors come down and play. And we just recently had, which was probably one of my favorite guests, was Gary Beers from NXS, like the bass player from NXS. And that was, to me, was like... next level.
Now, do they just stop by, or do they contact you ahead of time?
I have relationships with a lot of these musicians from the years, so it's all set up in advance. So we kind of know what we're doing, and we kind of know what's going to happen, and it, you know, allows them a chance to tell their friends and whatnot to come down. So, and it keeps. The only thing that's different, probably, about this than that other night I was talking about, the Lucy's night from years ago, is that this is organized, and we keep it organized so that we can feature a lot of players and do songs that you normally wouldn't hear anywhere else. You know, you're not going to hear Superstition. You're not going to hear Amy Winehouse Rehab. You're not going to hear those songs at the Viper Room. Like, it's just not going to happen. You know, we're going to play some B-sides. We're going to play some hits. It's going to always be ever-changing and exciting, so...
And how do you pick the theme each week? Do you decide? Do you have a group of people that you work with that help decide?
It's just at random. Like, my girlfriend picked this next theme for this week, which is like Celebrate America. So it's songs that are mentioning America and talk about America. Or,
well, it's 4th of July weekend, yeah, we should say. So yeah, that makes sense.
Or American artists. And then like next week, we're doing a night called So 80s, and the only reason why it's called So 80s is we have this player, Daniel Jakubovic from Israel, and his, like, tagline is, that's So 80s. Oh, that drummer, he's So 80s. And it's like, why don't we just do a night called So 80s? And me and him have been working on some really crazy song selection for that night, you know, that really feature that 80s rock sound and, you know. And it's just always changing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's your preparation like for those jams? You come up with the theme, you send out an invite, you know, you let everyone know about it, and I'm sure you have, you know, people submit, you know, they want to play. And then how do you, I guess, what's your process? How do you select songs and get it all organized?
Yeah, I work directly with the singers. So I kind of decide, like, you know, who's around. I can kind of see who's doing what, and I start reaching out to people, and I usually send song suggestions, you know, stuff that we haven't normally played that I think you're basically like a DJ. You know, you have to curate this entire night of music to keep people interested. The song selection has to be good. It's got to be unique. And I start working with them first, and then I have, you know, this continuing roster of musicians that's always rotating depending on who's available. So then I start asking them and pulling and see who's in town, and then we just start assigning songs, and yeah.
And you love it.
It's a huge workload, but I do like it. Yeah.
I was going to say, because you're also, you know, a session guitarist, mm-hmm. and a producer. So how do you juggle all these hats?
I get up really early.
How early do you get up?
I was up today at 7 o'clock.
Oh my. So what's like a morning like for you?
And today was even crazier because I drove back from Vegas yesterday. This morning I was up at 7 and I was editing drums at 7:30 on Pro Tools. Yeah. And then I went to breakfast and I came here. So I did some session work. I've worked with like Matt Sorum and some other guys and did a bunch of tracks. And I do some of the online stuff here and there. You know, I have a couple clients that call me every once in a while, but I won't lie, the session guitar thing is kind of a thing of the past, since a lot of producers can play guitar themselves now. It's just, and you don't really hear a lot of guitar in modern music, so it's not something.
It's more digital now, right?
Yeah, it's something that's not really called upon anymore. It's like, a friend of mine is this guy, Tim Pierce, who's got thousands of credits. He's played on everything. You know, his kind of work is a thing of the past. You know, he used to go out and do sessions every day, you know, big studios, big budget records, and it's just slowly just winding down. There's just not a need for session musicians anymore. So I do a little bit of that, but it's not a lot. And lately I've been producing these artists. Like, I just did, we're doing vocals tomorrow for this singer-songwriter named Max Fight. He actually opened the jam last week. We're doing 3 songs for his new EP.
Nice.
And I'm working with another singer-songwriter, Rome DeLuce, who's also a jam a jam guy.
Somebody you met at the jam?
Yeah, and so we're doing a cover of this song, Hallelujah, for him. I guess it's a Leonard Cohen song.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really exciting. That one's sounding awesome. So that's some other stuff I do as well.
That's awesome.
And I really like the producing of the artist, and I'm doing also my girlfriend Tiffany, her new song that's going to come out hopefully in the next month or so. So I don't know. I really like it. It's a whole nother set of skills, but it's combining like my educational background. Like I have a BSBA in business management. So, you know, meticulous tasks and organizing and planning.
That's up your alley.
I really like it. Yeah. So, you know, a producer's job is to take somebody's vision and get it from start to finish and complete it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so in my head, I've got all these checklists going of what we need to finish on the songs. And it's just, it's fun for me. I really like it. And it's a whole new thing. It's really exciting.
And do you have other dreams as far as making the Sunset Jam bigger or developing other big jam nights that maybe, you know, you can profit off of do you have other dreams?
I mean, the Sunset Jam is a great thing right now for what it is. It's helping a lot of people. We've got great sponsors like BAE Audio and Telefunken that have provided equipment for us to give away and to use. And some of the musicians have gotten to use equipment that they didn't get access to before, which is really exciting. So we've got that going for us there. I've done a couple other one-off booking nights, and it's just this night, I think, as it is, it's going well. So just kind of leave it alone. We've talked about doing live streaming, and
that'd be cool.
Yeah,
sometimes you do live Facebook videos, right?
Yeah, we do. But this would be more of like you'd go on a website, you'd see the broadcast from start to finish, or maybe you'd see 1 hour, or you could be somewhere in like Minnesota or something, and you want to know what's happening on the Sunset Strip,
and be jealous and wish I was there.
It's in the infant stages. We've been trying to figure it out. Maybe there would be some kind of charge, $1 charge or $2 charge to watch the broadcast. I don't know yet how we would do it, but that's in the works. And also maybe a Sunset Jam Nashville would be in the works. We've actually done two one-offs. We did one in Pittsburgh where, coincidentally, my friend Danny Ivory, who plays right now for Gallant, but she was also on tour with Beyonce, and my friend Sean, who's usually the house bass player for the jam, was also in Pittsburgh. They were both there for a wedding, so I was like, why don't I just fly in and let's just do a jam?
That's so smart.
So we did a jam at the Hard Rock and sold it out, and I did a one-off in Moscow, Russia. We did a Sunset Jam in Russia once, and it was like...
How do you get people to come?
I don't know. They just they just show up.
There's got to be some kind of advertising.
I have no idea. I don't know. It's just, if you build it, they will come, right?
Yeah. Obviously a smart businessman. You know how to market it. You know how to get people to come.
Like you're asking in Russia, how do people come? Well, I mean, I guess, you know, a lot of people there follow, you know, maybe about social networking or for the band I was working with. I mean, it was at their bar. They have a bar in Moscow that's 24/7 and has live music every night of the week. So they have a big social following, and maybe people were coming if they, you know, they found out that so-and-so was playing or whatnot. So, yeah, I don't know. They just show up.
You're lucky that way.
I hope they keep showing up.
How do you think social media has played an influence in the music business now? How have you seen it change? Especially being here for 10 years. I mean, it's changed in the past, I'd say, 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah, it's definitely different. And one thing I've noticed is a lot of the gear companies are doing their advertising, you know, through players of social media. So if you've got a high follower count, like I don't have that. I have 5,000 followers or something on there, but I know some girls on here that have 20,000 followers that are guitar players, and you know, like Fender's sending them guitars, and every post they have is, oh, thank you, Fender. And it's like, I think the gear companies are doing a lot of their advertising that way, and their ability to reach more people through the social networking. But I don't know if gigs are going out through social networking. Like there's a few websites that claim that they can help you get gigs and put a resume on our site. But as far as I've ever seen it, it's just word of mouth. Every gig I've ever gotten was because somebody told so-and-so about me or gave them my number. I think that it's hard to describe, but I think that aspect of it is not existent. But I think that advertising for gear and that sort of thing, and advertising your band. Like, I know venues now won't book bands anymore unless they have strong social numbers, which brings up another argument of, well, if you have 10,000 fans on your social network, we're going to book you. The venue might have an expectation that, you know, 1,000 people are going to show up.
And right.
Maybe you have 10,000 fans, but none of them are based here.
Right.
So the social networking thing, it's so interesting. It's like I've been trying to figure it out, but maybe there's nothing to figure out. Like, I've actually run ads for the jam sometimes. Like, I've run, we did a Billy Joel versus Elton John night, and I ran an ad for people that liked Billy Joel and liked Elton John that were a certain age range that were in West Hollywood. And it said that it reached 10,000 people, but I mean, our numbers that night weren't any crazier than they always are. You know, there were still 400 people there. I don't know how many came because they saw this ad. You know, so you know, it's just interesting. So everybody's posting, and I still just feel like if you like somebody's music, you're going to go out and listen to it. And it just, you know, if I had some original music to give somebody, I would probably just personally send it to them, and hopefully mm-hmm. they'd send it to the next person. And
no. So it sounds like it's played a little bit of an influence, but you still think it's important to have the networks and to have face-to-face, you know.
Yeah. It's helped the Sunset Jam because people have come across it, or they've come across videos.
That's how I did. I came across it on Facebook. You have Facebook invites each week, what the theme is. And it helps me because then I went to the Billy Joel, Elton John night, and I was like, oh, this sounds awesome. I want to come to this. Night. Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, so it works twofold, and I think that it's helping. But I don't know. I can't figure out exactly what's happening, you know. And that's
fair enough.
Yeah.
So I read somewhere: is it true you used to play? You're the band leader and lead guitarist at Six Flags.
That's a long story. Maybe that should have been an off-topic. Should have been an off-limit subject. Yeah, I did that at one point, and it's like in music, you just take any gig that you can. And the touring was light with this Russian band, and
So it was around that time?
Yeah, it was the summer of 2015, so somehow somebody, I think Barry Squire, recommended me. I did an audition, and, you know.
But that helps get you exposure. I think all that stuff helps.
It helped me meet a lot of musicians because I was touring in Russia and China and Europe, and I was leaving every weekend, so I didn't really know anybody in town
in
anymore.
In L.A., right.
Yeah, everybody was... It's funny, when you're gone, people forget about you. So it's like you come back, and I met a lot of players from playing at Six Flags. So,
well, there you go. Yeah, so it was a great experience.
Yeah, it's always good to do new gigs because you meet new people. But yeah, that was an interesting gig. Very, very hot.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
It was very hot, and you would do like 4 sets a day and in the heat. So it's up
would
in Valencia,
you... so... make a playlist for that? Did you come up with, you just said covers or do originals?
Yeah, it was just covers. There was a musical director, so I was just a hired guy. I just, you know, show up at 4, first sets of 5, you know, you leave at 10, you're done. Get your paycheck.
There you go. Yeah. It's better than Rite Aid.
That's true.
There you go.
There's always that. You know, if I'm getting paid to play an instrument, it's a good day.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it sounds like you've been able to make it work.
Yes, somehow, some way, it just seems to work.
When did your passion for music start? Like you said, you went to school for business. Yeah. So when did you, or have you always been passionate about music?
I've always loved music. You know, like I used to just stay at home and listen to, you know, my dad's record collection or my brother's CDs or something. Like I just always loved music. I loved Tom Petty, Alice Cooper. You know, my dad had Pink Floyd, The Wall when I was a kid. It just struck with me. You know, there's something about music. You can't touch it. You can't taste it. But it makes you feel a certain way, and it just, you know, music is the best thing there is, for sure. You know, it's, yeah, I don't know.
When did you pick up the guitar for the first time?
I think in middle school is when I actually, like, I had a guitar earlier, and I intended to take lessons at one time, but I didn't. And then in middle school, I really, like, took it seriously.
Did your dad get you lessons? You were like, this is something I want to do?
No, my mom did, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom was a big music person, and so she paid for some lessons, and And we started the band, and the band was going to move to L.A., and the band didn't move to L.A.
You were in a band in high school?
Yeah, so we went to I went to college, and then I moved. But nobody else came.
What was your band called? I love hearing band names.
The first band I was in was called Crimson Mask. Yeah, and nice. We changed the name to The Failsafe Method. And then I was in, God, so many different bands.
I'm so curious how high schoolers like come up with band names. Like I think Nick told me, I can't remember what his was. I'd have to go back and ask him, but he was in a band in high school and it was like some like over easy. It was like some like egg, I don't know, some like egg reference. Yeah. I'm like, how do people come up with this shit?
I don't know. I have photos and stuff and I have like our first show on VHS and I actually just came across a bunch of CDs and like I just ripped and put a bunch of stuff on a hard drive, my archive hard drive. And it was all old shows and performances and demos, and it was really cool. And I was like, man, I definitely could have used more lessons listening to this. Like, one of the guitar solos was just in the wrong key. And I was like, who, like, was producing this and let this, like, happen?
Well, you have more knowledge now. I'm sure back yeah. then you thought you were the shit and were just amazing.
I listened to it, and then, like, I recorded the riff, and I played over it. And what the right key would be. And I was like, I just couldn't understand how we paid somebody to make this demo for us and they let that happen. Like, they're just like, go ahead, that sounds right.
Did you make like CDs? Did you hand out CDs?
Yeah, I was always like the guy that would do the website, do the flyers, print the CDs, book the shows. Like, I just did everything.
Yeah.
You know, and
well, it serves you well now.
Yeah, exactly. All that experience really paid off because I could write a book probably on, like, do-it-yourself, you know, musician. Like, I remember what it was like, just every, you know, just wanting it so bad and wanting people to show up and booking shows and wanting to play, you know, the bigger places. Like, we started playing at VFW halls and, you know, the local Legion centers and wanting to play at, like, this place called Club Laga was the place in Pittsburgh that was held like 150, 200 people, but it had a big stage and lights, and it's just like just wanting to play there so bad, and just the process to getting there.
Did you guys play there?
No, we never played there. We ended up playing a stage, the floor beneath, which was still cool.
You can still play there now, I bet.
They closed it.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, but we ended up playing another place called Mr. Small's Theater, which was bigger and cooler.
There you go.
And had a better sound system, yeah.
So it seems like you're the type of guy that like has a goal and you always go after it.
Always. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm constantly writing out my goals and constantly writing out my vision and where I'm seeing things. Like I really like that kind of stuff. Like I listen to a lot of Tony Robbins tapes.
Yes, I love him.
It's helpful. It really is helpful. And, you know, my brain by default is just in 1,000 different directions. So, you know, listening to those kind of things and having a little bit of clarity is a good way for me to narrow down what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you wear a lot of hats, and you are very goal-oriented, so I'm sure that, I can just relate a lot to what you're saying about going after what you want to be doing.
Yeah, I really enjoy it, too. You know, I really enjoy being, like, a self-business kind of thing. It's exciting for me, you know?
You have control of your own life.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, well, I feel like stepping the pedal a little bit harder today, and it's going to pay off at some point in the future. But if there's failure, I only can blame myself for that. And, you know, if something doesn't work out, I just keep going on the next thing. Like, I can't even begin to think of what different ventures I've tried in the last, you know, 10 years. But, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that just builds to these things. Like, I'm about to launch another new thing that I haven't even announced yet, but it's looking great, and it takes a lot of these different things. So
was there something you were going after that you call a failure that you didn't succeed at as well as you wanted to?
I think it's just probably from maybe different gigs in the past that maybe you get fired from or it doesn't work out. I look at that as some sort of failure, you know, and but also at the same time, it's selection, not rejection, could be the mentality. This isn't the right fit for you.
Right.
So I don't know if, I guess failure is a really strong word.
I guess what challenges have you had on your path?
Okay, yeah. I mean, even look, for instance, at that the first time I did that jam, nobody was showing up. There was musicians showing up, but it didn't reach another audience. And I don't know why or what had happened, but after 5 or 6 weeks, it was very clear that the whole reason of that jam was to get the exposure to the Russian people to go and go do that gig for 3 years. So
exactly, yes.
Everything seems to lead in a direction, and if you look back, it's not, I guess failure is the wrong word. I guess it's like...
It's a setback.
Yeah, it's or it's a building block for something bigger that you can't see, you know, and I try not to live too far in the future on what's going to happen. You know, I try to just do the best I can do today on whatever my schedule has today or whatever. Even tomorrow, I'm like not even thinking about the sessions I have tomorrow. It's like, that's too far away. But yeah, as far as other setbacks, I mean, big setback is not being in Los Angeles and you want to be here. You know, I wanted to move here right away after high school, and I didn't want to go to college. Things that I want to do and the things that I have done. And yeah, I'm working on a project right now that's really exciting for me that I can share with you that's going to launch very soon that I'm really, really excited to get involved in. Is I've always done music for like television and film here and there, and I've gotten called to do different briefs for commercials and whatnot. And ever since I was a kid, I really enjoyed the music that you hear in the background. And we're shooting for October to launch, but we've got 10 composers signed on board already. It's going to be this HMG production music, and we're going to have music that's available for licensing for commercials and film and television. And that's going to be really exciting for me because it combines my business side with my creative side, and all the connections are already there. I've already done work for a lot of these people, but now it's an ability to get other people's music as well in front of these people, and other people's music to be selected for television and film. And it's going to be a really exciting project, and I've been working really hard on it the last couple months, and we're gonna launch in October is the goal.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you're acting as a music supervisor now.
In a sense, yeah, kind of the liaison between the artist and the music supervisor or the post-production facility, and yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
I love that you're always coming up with new, like, entrepreneur ideas to build your brand and build other ways to do your passion.
Yeah, you always have to reinvent yourself. It's like being guitar player is just, it's not enough anymore, I don't feel like, unless you're playing for Paul McCartney or Foreigner and you're getting paid, you know, $5,000 a week, $10,000 a week. You have to reinvent yourself, and you have to do new things, and you have to remain teachable. You have to learn about what else is happening. Like the producing thing kind of like happened by accident. You know, it happened by accident a few years ago, and then it went from doing this TV cues to working with artists, and everything's always changing, but I'm always open for it. You know, if I was set in my way of, well, I have to play guitar, I have to do this, I might not be where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always open to what direction I'm pulled in, you know, and running a jam was not what I envisioned for myself 5 years ago, but it ended up becoming a great thing.
Absolutely.
It's helped me, and more importantly, it's helped a lot of people. You know, a lot of people have gotten work from it and have met people, and it's a really cool thing. It's really cool to be part of this movement that's been going on the last year and a half, and yeah.
Yeah, and I've had some of those people come on the show as well, and I have some more lined up.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Because I just think there's such amazing talent there that isn't widely known, and I want to bring them here and get them more exposure and have people know that there's so much amazing talent in Los Angeles that people aren't aware of. And that's what's so great about your jam is it gives those people exposure. And like you said, gives them connected to other people to give them job opportunities.
And you wouldn't even think it, but some of the people that are playing the jam are supporting some of the biggest superstars in the world.
Yep.
Like she said, you have Danielle coming Monday. I mean, she played for Charlie XCX. I mean, that's huge. She's supporting one of the biggest, you know, players. And my friend Danny Ivory, she's supporting Beyonce. It's like they're the people that are making these superstars sound great.
And people are so focused on the superstar that they don't realize the band behind them. And those are the people that I really want to talk to and learn about.
Yeah, and they get to share, you know, real stories and real experiences with some of these people. You know, it's exciting.
Yeah, I had my friend Eva Gardner on the show. She played for Pink and is currently playing with Cher. And it was just so interesting hearing her story and why she wanted to play bass. And it's like, I don't think those people get enough exposure, get enough, you know, credit for what they do and how much work they've put into it.
Absolutely.
You know, you're so focused on Pink or you're so focused on the lead person that you don't realize the band behind them.
She's been playing for Pink forever.
Yeah. You know her?
I don't know her personally, but okay. We should get her down to the jam to play.
I'll give her a call.
Yeah, that'd be great.
She's with Cher right now, but we'll see.
But Cher's probably out in Vegas.
She's in playing. Vegas, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, they're doing a thing in Vegas right now. I'm sure she would do the jam.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, no, that's rad. What advice would you have for someone who does want to be a touring musician?
You just have to be, first you have to be here. You have to come to a music center, Los Angeles, Nashville. I don't know about New York. I've not really spent a lot of time there, you know, so you have to come to a music center for one, you know, and you could be a big fish in a small pond back home, but you're going to come here and the level of talent is so high. You have to be ready. Number two, I guess. I don't know. We won't number any more of this, but you have to be ready. You have to have the chops and the skills, but you also have to have a good personality. You have to have a good ability to hang out with other people. So there's a lot of different things that go into it. And you also have to be teachable and be willing. You know, ego has got to be put aside. You know, when you're playing for somebody else, you have to play their parts with integrity and respect. And your job is... It's the same as being a 9-to-5 job, I feel like, in a sense. At least I treat it that way. You know, if somebody's saying, hey, we're going to pay you X amount to do these shows, it's like, I'm going to play those parts to the best of my ability to be as true to those parts as I can, because that's what they're paying me for. They're not paying to hear me play some guitar solo. I could be playing the same note over and over again. It could be the simplest thing, but that's what they're paying me for. I have to put myself out of the equation. Oh, well, maybe I have this idea to do this on their song. Well, that's not what they're asking. So you have to get rid of that ego and put it aside. And you have to be out networking and meeting people in places like this jam, like Sunset Jam and other events around town. You just have to be out and introduce yourself to people and be hungry and be willing to take opportunities. You know, I know guys that play stadium shows and the next day they're playing a wedding or they're playing a bar for 10 people. It's always changing. It's this rock star glamorous life is very few get to experience that you think it is. So everything's always changing. You have to be evolving, you know, and you have to be ready and willing for the next opportunity at all times. Like I remember one time we did a tour of Germany and Switzerland. It was big shows. It was great. The next night I played at Six Flags. And you have to give it your all too. You have to be playing every show like it's 20,000 people, 10,000 mm-hmm. people, and really just treat everything with equal amount of respect.
That's really good advice.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming on, Eric. This was so fun. And I'm excited for the Sunset Jam this Monday.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. We have a special July 4th night. We're going to do July 10th is going to be our 80s night, and July 17th is going to be our one-year anniversary party at the Viper Room.
What can we expect for that?
You know, I've been toying with the idea of doing the exact same show as the first night we did at the Viper Room.
What was the theme the first night?
There was no theme.
There wasn't.
It was just like a was a potpourri or just like insane just mix of songs. So I might do a little bit of that. Like there was we didn't even do themes for the longest time. We just kind of introduced them because they were fun. You know, it's just like, so I've got a couple of the original singers that did that first night lined up to come down and do some of the same songs, but we might open it up and do other stuff too, but it's just going to be a complete mix of stuff that night. Yeah. It's going to be really fun.
Awesome.
That was in my ideas for what we would do, but
bring it back to the original. It's a good like one-year anniversary celebration.
Yeah. We probably won't do the exact playlist, but I'll probably do hints of it with some of this, you know. That or I was going to go through all of the playlists from the last year and find like my favorite performances and just redo those in one night.
Do you have lists of every show and all the songs you guys did?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a huge folder on my computer with all the playlists from the last
gosh. So every song that you guys have performed.
Yeah.
Crazy. So that's what you're good at what you do.
Yeah,
you stay organized.
I know. I just sit on Excel all day.
So where can people hear your music or find out about the Sunset Jam?
Yeah, so you can check out the sunsetjam.net. You can check out erichimmelmusic.com or Eric Himmel Facebook. We're going to be releasing those new songs from Max Fight and Rome DeLuce and Tiffany Medallion very soon. So I'll have those links up on there. And you can check out hmgproductionmusic.com. That's going to be in October. So, you know, if you're listening to this podcast a little later, that website should be up and live. And yeah, that's
right on. I'm so glad you did this. Thanks for coming on, Eric.
Thank you for having me. Ржавые струны, ломкий янтарь, ты думал гореть.